All right, the legislature's back in session. I would like to ask the vice chair of the Health and Human Services Committee to take the resolution.
Thank you, Martha.
Go ahead, Will.
It is with a heavy heart but a sense of purpose that I introduce Resolution K, authorization to divest in Tompkins Home Health Care Certified Home Health Agency, CHA, and authorization to issue a request for proposal to the Health Department.
Is there a second? Nathan seconds.
And I think I would like to let some others speak to this in the purpose of, and Nathan, do you want to say something?
Oh, well, sure.
Okay. All right. Well, while you think about that, Nathan, let me just say a couple of words to start. I want to thank everybody who's been involved in this process for quite a few months already. People who've helped us to be able to make an informed decision. Frank Proto and the Health and Human Services Committee, which has had about four extra meetings, you know, jammed into a very short period of time and read a lot of material. Frank Krupa and his entire Health Department staff. Betty Falco of the Health Planning Council, who's in the back row. The Board of Health and County Administration. Joe has answered every question that has come at him and including as late as this morning. So thank you all very much. Over the course of these months, we did what we said we would do last fall when the question of divestiture was put forward as part of the 2011 budget. We conducted a transparent and open process that looked at both the quantitative and programmatic issues associated with keeping or divesting of the CHA. And the legislature has taken the time to do its due diligence. You heard tonight a little bit of the other kinds of things that we have to do all the time, just even as we're juggling a single big decision like this. We don't have the luxury of focusing on just one thing at a time. But in pursuit of this decision, we commissioned a financial analysis by an outside expert, hosted a panel discussion for input from other counties, and we got the state to send written responses to our questions, even though they couldn't manage to send a real person. We heard the perspective of a private agency. We created opportunities for staff and citizens to ask questions and provide input. And as I said, Joe and Sigrid and others have pursued answers to all the questions that have been asked. We've now arrived at a decision point on the schedule that was charted last fall when the notion of divestiture was first proposed and then reaffirmed by the Health Department earlier this year as in the department's best interest when they specifically asked us for a concrete timeline as to how we would get to this point. This decision is not an easy one for any of us. We know and like and respect the people who work for our CHA, much as we value and know and respect all of our employees. We know how hard they work. We know about their dedication to the clients they serve. We know what an important service it is. A lot, unfortunately, a lot of what we'll need to do in the coming months in this time of caps and constraints will mean the loss of services to our residents. So it is with a heavy heart that we consider this resolution and the many, many others that will follow. And please understand that this is certainly with full understanding that of what it means to people who are employed by Tompkins County, what it means to people who receive the services from Tompkins County. I asked Marshall Lynch to pass around the phone numbers of our Albany leaders, and I hope you take those and use them and give them to other people as well, because they need to know what they've done. So with that, I would like to ask for your comments. Nathan, did you want to go first?
I don't have to go first.
All right. Dooley and then Jim.
Well, I would actually like to amend the resolution by substitution. In your packets, you have a substitute that I filed. It's got the letter K on it also, and I'd like, the title says, and it's one I can move not with a heavy heart, but with an okay heart. Authorization to continue Tompkins County Certified Home Health Agency and invest further in its operations.
And that's seconded by Pam.
And I'd like to read it because I don't think the public has any idea what this says.
All right.
Whereas during the 2011 budget process, a proposal was made to divest of the county's Certified Home Health Agency, CHA, and funds were allocated to review the operation of the CHA. And whereas the Department of Health entered into an agreement with Jack Vineski, CPA and Associates, for a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis to provide fiscal information and projections about the CHA to assist in making a decision on the CHA. And whereas a panel discussion was held on May 10th to provide perspectives from various professionals associated with home care services on regulations and impacts of operating or divesting, whereas it is clear from the Vineski report that there are a number of steps the health department can take to significantly reduce the costs associated with operating a CHA, and the department estimates the current $400,000 operating subsidy can be cut in half by the end of 2012. And whereas beyond assuring the CHA's clients of continued compassionate care, the existence of the county-operated CHA, with its cadre of well-trained nurses and others, provides important benefits to the Tompkins County community as a whole, such as the depth of knowledge, staff, and coordination actions necessary for emergency preparedness, and such benefits cannot be quantified in dollars. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the county continue operating the Certified Home Health Agency. Resolve further that the department will continue to implement changes to reduce the tax subsidy. Resolve further that the legislature understands further investments may be required to implement measures that could help reduce the tax subsidy.
Is there discussion? Are we ready to vote? Frank?
Yes, I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not, but I'd like to discuss the resolution to continue the CHA.
Well, that's the resolution that's in front of us.
Yeah, that's right.
I know.
It's a we are being asked to substitute this for the other one.
Thank you.
So
we'll wait for the vote.
Okay. All in favor of substituting this resolution and having this be the resolution on the floor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That fails, 6-9.
Madam Chair, point of information.
Yes.
There are two member file resolutions added to this agenda. Could I turn to Jonathan Wood to ask for the appropriate procedure to introduce those either prior to or by tabling what has now become the main resolution, Resolution K?
Which specific resolutions,
Frank? The resolutions at the end of the agenda, well, they're no longer at the end, N, filed by me, and O, filed by Legislator Shinagawa.
So I think you better just ask about your own resolution.
I'm sorry?
Why don't you just ask about your own resolution?
I can ask about the others as well. It's a procedural question, Madam Chair.
Well, I mean, with regard to your resolution, or which I assume is Resolution N?
Yes.
I mean, basically, it's a resolution to amend or substitute, very similar to what we just voted on, or what the legislature just voted on. And one could have moved to amend or substitute. Of course, substantively, I mean, while it has different whereas, it's substantively what was just, you know, what the legislature just voted on. And the second one really hasn't been moved. But I assume that that, too, would be moved as a motion to substitute or amend.
Okay, so as the discussion moves forward on what is now Resolution K, either one of those, or both, or neither, but either one of those could be introduced as additional substitute resolutions.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair.
All right, the main motion, Resolution K, is in front of us. Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me start out by saying clearly it was said by other people around the table that we do value the employees. We do value the work that not only this department does every day, but all the employees that we have. And let me tell you why I am supporting the divesting of the CHOP program at this point. Early on, or a couple of meetings ago, there were some questions asked by the county administrator, and it tended to focus the discussion, at least at one of the meetings we were at when we moved this resolution. And an important question, I think, for me and for all of us around the table, and obviously we're going to answer it in different ways, but can this function be done by someone else? And the answer, clearly, what I've heard during this whole process is, yes, it can be done by someone else. What the issue seems to be, are we going to be able to do it equally as well as someone else? Or can someone else do it and still have the same consideration for the patients that our department does? And I have to believe that yes, someone else can do it and they can still deliver the service the same way. An interesting thing comes to my mind when I think about public and private. I was a teacher for 34 years. I worked in a private school for 2 years. And there was no difference, a discernible difference that I could ever see in the commitment that I had as a public school teacher or a private school teacher, and also my colleagues who were private school teachers, and they were able to deliver the same services to the customers no matter who they were employed by. And I think it led back to the fact that everyone in the business of teaching were professionals, and I think everyone in the business of delivering service to the most needy in the community by nurses are professionals also. The basic difference is who's paying for it at some time, and so that became an issue for me. Can this program move ahead without a subsidy? I just heard in the other resolution that it can't. Even a $200,000 subsidy after all the improvements are made. And it would still move ahead with that kind of a deficit for at least the first year. And I'm guessing it would probably increase over time if we were to stay in the business. One of the other questions was, it came up, can be provided by other entities? Yes, it has. One of the other issues that came up to me, and not trying to go through all four questions, was how does it fit into the world that I live in? Someone mentioned it back here. I was fortunate enough as an individual to be in a private hospital in New York City 7 years ago, and I got amazing service from those people in that private hospital. They were employed by the hospital. I had amazing health insurance to pay for all those things. And I think an issue that came to me from all of that recently is there's been a big concern about whether people who are not covered by Medicare or Medicaid or private insurance, how would they be covered? And people have suggested to me that they would not be covered. They would not be taken care of. My sense is that is not true. if you're a private nursing organization, you will have to build into your business plan the so-called charity cases. And I believe we have that in our plan. We have people that we take care of that are not paid by, not reimbursed by anyone. And clearly, another organization who takes this over, it's a private organization, they have to have that in their plan. And if they do not have that, then they risk their license, they risk everything they stand for, they risk their reputation they bring to the county if they come here. I don't want to spend any more time. I know other people will do this. It's a really tough issue. I think on one hand, it's an easy issue to say yes to keeping the program. But what that brings forward is the fact that what other department in Tompkins County are you going to get $400,000 out of? How will that affect the rest of the budget? It would mean to this department alone that they would have to redistribute how they're looking at this 11.2 cut that we have on this piece of paper. So it looks like to me, and it feels like to me right now, I think the health department would, whether or not they agree with me or with divesting, they clearly want us to make a decision on one way or another today. And let me just add a PS to all of this. Some time ago, the Board of Health voted 4-1 to divest with one person absent at that meeting. But again, that they understand the business that we're in, and they understand what the consequences are if we do that. And I do put some credence in what that group, that board said. So,
thank you, Jim. Nathan, then Frank.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm actually kind of shaky with this. This is the first time in a long time, so I'm a little nervous. I apologize. So earlier this year at my hospital, our chaplain retired, and he was the non-provider member of our institutional review board at our hospital. And our institutional review board, we're in charge of making sure that in any study that's done with human subjects, you know, that we're making sure that we don't cause harm or unnecessary harm to those patients. That there's a low risk of harm, and that whatever things that we do has a much higher benefit, right? And so we do about 50 studies a year at my hospital, and so it's a big deal and a big responsibility. And you know, so I've joined that board, and it's been a very interesting for me. And the big, of course, the principal ethic that we have to deal with is, of course, you know, first do no harm. And as I said, do no harm is tough because chemotherapy does harm, right? I mean, most medical procedures do some sort of little harm or have a chance for harm, but the benefits are huge if it's successful, and that's what we have to weigh. I've been able to use my small background in medical ethics here on the county legislature to think about the decisions that we have to make, and I think about harm a lot. One of the concerns that people have is, will this harm patients? And I don't think it will harm patients. And the reason why I believe that is that, well, first off, the evidence out there, whether it's, you know, quality studies that are out there, and even from testimony from other agencies and other counties that we've heard, is that it hasn't harmed their patients. Secondly, there's a lot of evidence that shows that, you know, that another entity that has competencies, and not that we don't have competencies in this, but, you know, that can dedicate full resources, you know, to this, that can invest in better technology, that they can provide very good service for patients as well. So there's that potential for benefit. But also, you know, when I think about harm, I think about if we don't divest, then what happens to the rest of the county? And so, you know, I really believe the divestiture actually supports our social safety net. And it's a weird concept, but what I mean by that is that, you know, divesting from this means that we have $400,000 that we can use, for another service, another very important service to our community, like municipal youth services, long-term care system support for the elderly, you know, road patrol in our rural communities, and even, you know, other programs within the health department, right? This is the only service, as Jim said, or one of the only few services that if we divest, it will still exist for our residents. But when we cut those COPS programs that we earlier debated, or when we cut intermunicipal youth services programs and foster care programs, I mean, what happens? That's those services go away, and that is a huge harm to our community. And another area in which I look at harm is on the property tax and what that means. And you know, I wish that we were the state and the federal government, and we had progressive ways of raising revenue, so that we could tax the rich, we could increase fees on, you know, on services that that the wealthy use. We could generate revenues in a progressive way that didn't hurt everyday people, didn't hurt the poor, didn't hurt the elderly. Unfortunately, the only way that we have and the local level to raise revenue is through the property tax. And the property tax harms people. It really harms people, because we know that when that property tax increases, right, and, you know, yes, maybe $400,000 may not, but right now we have a tax levy hole of, what, 15%? You know, and 15% increase to people's property tax, that causes harm. And what that does is it means that people will could lose their homes. And we know that happens. I mean, that is not an exaggeration, not a myth. That is something that actually happens, and we probably all know people in our communities that have had to move or have lost their homes because of high property taxes. And that causes a lot of harm to those individuals, to the elderly, and also to our communities. So, you know, this decision, obviously, it's a very tough one. But I think in terms of it doing harm, I think it's actually the decision that in the long term actually does the least harm to our community compared to the other big cuts that we're going to have to look at coming down the road, and also when looking at the property tax. So that's why I'm supporting this today. You know, there's a lot of big, you know, I could have gone into the finances of this thing, but at the end of the day, you know, if we didn't have this huge deficit problem, you know, I would gladly keep this program. But the fact of the matter is that this deficit problem exists, and that's why the money is important. But also, I think this is a decision, as I said, that causes the least harm compared to the other things that we're going to have to look at in the future.
Thank you, Nathan. I have Frank, then Peter, then Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to respectfully disagree a little bit with some of the things that have already been said. First, let me correct one item. The Board of Health voted 4-1 to divest, or advise us to divest. There were three members of the Board of Health that were not there, two of them doctors, as a matter of fact. So then my understanding, because I attended that meeting, as did some of you, there were three of the four that voted to divest, they each said it was with very, very reluctantly that they were supporting that position. I wish that I could say something profound, but I know that a lot of you, especially around this table, over the last 6 or 7 months, have had a lot of information thrown at you. You've had a lot to read, and you've also been lobbied pretty hard by some individuals. This is not an easy decision. You've heard all that before. I don't intend to go through chapter and verse. We've done that already. But first, let me thank the staff. The staff really did a heck of a job in pulling everything together. They've been under a lot of stress, and this has been going on since last year. As a matter of fact, it was the end of last summer when this was first floated. In addition to that, I'd like to thank you guys, because I know you've spent a lot of time reading this material, and some of us have too. We've gone to a lot of meetings. Some of you out in the gallery attended a lot of those meetings also and supplied a lot of information for us to deal with, so the community has really been a part of the review. Not everybody agrees, but at least we've had a bite at the apple. I don't want to make it or seem like it's a foregone conclusion, even though some have said the vote is apparent here. A miracle may happen, too. Who knows? The couple of things that I would like to say procedurally. We heard a comment earlier this evening from a member of the public that wanted to take a hunk out of the state. This is not a Republican issue, and this is not a Democrat issue. This is an issue that we have to deal with at the local level. If we're going to duck every single decision and blame it on the state, whether it's any of those names right there, the state Senate, the state assembly in some regard, we're not doing our jobs. This is a tough time for all of us. And as Jim has already mentioned, and Nathan has too, we have a really tough budget year in front of us. Just ask Joe. It is not going to be easy. It's the toughest one I think that I've ever been through, and I've been around here a couple of years. The concerns are agency concerns. Every one of our human service agencies is getting hit with something. Now, we're going to have to decide how much we're going to fund them with also. So I would not put a political tag on this whatsoever. It's easy to pass the buck, but guess what? We ran for these offices, and it's always easier when there's more money around because we can all look like heroes. This isn't the case this time. I'm not in favor of divesting. I'll tell you why. If this service goes away, this is like the state selling bridges and one-shots to make up their budget deficit, in my opinion. We ain't ever going to get this back. The license, as Dooley wrote in her write-up, the memo that she sent to all of us, this license is valuable. This DOH is not issuing anymore at this point. That's why there's some competitiveness, or perhaps we hope there might be some competitiveness if you vote to divest, and we get some interest in it. The numbers have been estimated at anywhere from $500 to $1 million. Could be more. Joe also sent a response to Dooley's write-up around today that took apart in four instances how that money could be applied. We ain't going to end up with $1 million to subsidize our budget because a lot of that money, depending upon worst case, best case, I don't want to go into that whole memo, Joe, a lot of that money will go to sustain the CHA while it's winding down. Now, you also have to consider anybody that buys this is not going to walk up to us and hand us a check, not for $1 million. You get it over a period of time. And who knows? That's the negotiated part as to how you receive it. It could be in dribs and drabs. It could be a fixed percentage. We haven't seen that yet. The other concern that I have is that because of the short-term nature of this, I'm worried about 5 years from now. We got to do some long-range planning. We've all talked about that. We have to do two-year budgeting and three-year budgeting. The state's not going to do us any favors, and we have to be a little bit smarter about how we spend our local money. And I think our local taxpayers, the ones I've spoken to, are in favor of keeping this. And we heard from some folks earlier this evening in that regard. Some of the people I've spoken to, and Carol asked me earlier today if I'd heard from anybody, and I have. I imagine you have, too. We're going to have to make decisions about which programs are more valuable. Pat has been pretty persistent about asking about prioritizing. And a comment was made at one of the earlier health committee meetings that the budget process just began. I'm sorry, I respectfully disagree. The budget process began last year. And this program was put out there as an early hit, low-hanging fruit, as some people might call it, because there's a perception that somebody will step up and take it over on the private side. You may think, boy, Proto, that's a very interesting and unusual position for you to be arguing. Well, it is. I think this one is worth saving, and I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is to do it. I don't want to see the tax rate or the tax levy go up to 10%. But we haven't even begun the formal budget process yet. We have heard Joe ask this evening to confirm when our budget retreat would be. And that's sort of the second meeting. The first meeting we had was to set the levy, or at least a presumed levy. We haven't seen the array of programs. Our assistant, no, Kevin is not the assistant administrator, but Kevin Sutherland sent around a spread today that described what each department would have to cut. That's probably the second time we've seen any of that. I'm willing, and I know this would create even more stress for the department, I'm willing to buy a little more time so we can at least get a look at the rest of the budget. I know that Brenda Crosby is probably not I'm not her favorite person right now, but that adds to her aggravation. But I want to make sure that we give every single opportunity to every department to make a case to us. You want to prioritize? We're going to get into discussions about what areas and what items are more important. We need to talk about that. It's up to the 15 of us to really decide which way we have to go. The stress on the department, just as a quick aside, why hasn't this been financially as successful, if you want to call it that, as perhaps some other departments' programs have been? Remember, we had to renovate, we had to locate, renovate, and move an entire health department from West Hill to East Hill, up by the airport. And it was delayed for a whole host of reasons. A lot of stress on the department. You've heard Dr. Klapek mention H1N1. Any of you remember the aggravation that one caused? People were distracted by that. In this whole array of things, we did a search for a public health director, which we had to go through, and it took a little longer than anyone anticipated. It isn't as if people were sitting on their hands. There hasn't been a cash injection into this program in at least 4 years. We've had cuts in the department. I've chaired the health committee now for the better part of the term of the time that I've been on this board. I can tell you that we haven't funded the health department, in my opinion, to the tune that we should be funding it for quite some time. This is an opportunity for us to step up, give this program a chance. Let's see what it can do. Sigrid has come up with an array of items that they can cut and probably trim and probably refine and save us over $200,000. Yeah, there's a potential for funding of $400,000, but we can knock that in half. The number is $180,000 that we'd have to fund it for 2012, by the way. That, I think, Joe refined that number for us. There's a ripple effect, and thanks, Martha, thank you for letting me go on and on here for a few minutes. There's a ripple effect with department staff. There's a ripple effect with other agencies in the community. If this program goes away, it's going to take some time for any other organization, depending upon how successful they are in a bid. We don't have to accept an offer, by the way. There's no reason for us to agree to an offer if it's not in our best interest. Those of you that know me, I can talk for another 5 hours, and I won't do that because I don't think that would be fair to the rest of the folks around this table. I only hope that you'll step back and think about this, because this is a decision that's long-ranging. It is very long-range. It is not a one-year quick fix. Step up to the plate. We can peddle it to a private-side organization. This has long-reaching effects on the community. It isn't just seniors. That's the one we hear about. There's veterans involved. There's kids involved. There's tough care cases involved. I honestly don't know if the private side is required to do charity care. We heard Jim mention that. I don't know the answer to that. I know the hospital is, but I don't know if the private side is required to do that. Whether they are or not, they should. We don't know if the private side is going to step in an emergency. They're not required to do that, but we hope that they would. I would urge you to consider a resolution that extends this. My wish would be for 2 years, to give it enough time to implement those changes that Sigrid has proposed, and that we can get this thing back on solid footing. It may cost us a few bucks, but this one is worth saving. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have Peter, Brian, Leslin, and Dooley, and Pat, and Carol. Let me see what else, Dooley. And I'll put myself after Carol if there's anything left to say, and Will. All right. What did I say? Dooley? Who was that? I said Peter, Brian, Leslin, Dooley, Pat.
Why don't you just go around the room?
All right, we'll go. We'll go Peter, Brian, Leslin, and then go Dooley and around. So, Peter.
Well, I don't have a lot of wisdom. I agree with what Jim said. I agree with what Nathan said. I agree a lot with what Frank said, but a lot that I disagree with. But I just really, I mean, it's obviously an issue which has touched the hearts of a lot of people, and I feel that I would like to talk about why it is that I have no doubt in my mind that the right thing to do is divest. No doubt whatsoever. I don't find it that difficult a decision. I agree with Frank to start with in that, of course it's all Albany's fault. Of course there's dysfunction there, but it really doesn't matter to me. There's nothing I can do about that. And there's an old aphorism that I like, which is play the hand you're dealt. Here we are, I asked for this position, I campaigned for it, and here I am, and the hand that I'm dealt is the 2% tax cap or 2.3% tax cap, if that's going to change anything. It's the financial situation that we're in. And my responsibility, along with my 14 colleagues, is to make a decision that's, given all of those facts, that's in the best interests of the residents of the county. I'm certainly not going to say that it's a happy time to be doing this, but nonetheless, somebody has to do it. The cuts. Let's talk about the cuts. The cuts are draconian. Okay, we're talking about making cuts in our budget, which are, I don't know, in my head I calculate between $2.5 and $3 million, something like that, is what the cuts that we're talking about are. And you know, before I came onto the board, I might have thought, yeah, there's a lot of fat in the budget. There's all kinds of things that the county can do and that they needn't do. And why should we cut services to the people who are least able to take care of themselves, the elderly, the sick? Why should we be concentrating on them? Why don't we cut the fat? Well, I've been through one budget season, and Frank, I'm sorry to say that I don't think that the second budget season is going to be all that different than the first budget season. The things that we had difficulty cutting last year, we're going to have difficulty cutting this year, and the cuts are greater. I don't think there's any gold at the end of the rainbow when we get to look at what's going to come out of the department heads. We're going to see more or less what we saw last year. Why is it that, all right, let me talk about these cuts. I'm chair of the Public Safety Committee, and I've been sitting at my computer trying to figure out in my own head what cuts I would make to the Public Safety Committee, to the departments that report to the Public Safety Committee, to get the 8% or 10% or whatever it is cuts that we have to make. And when I look at it, I just can't figure out how we're actually going to do what Joe asked us to do. I mean, what are we going to cut in the public safety? Do you want to cut the road patrols? Is that something you want to cut? I don't think so. I don't think people want to have less police on the streets than we have at the moment. I think, and now at the moment, we actually don't have enough. Do you want to cut the emergency response system that enables the fire trucks and the police vehicles to come within 2 or 3 minutes of any time that a call is made to 911? I don't think so. Do you want to cut legal aid to the indigent? I don't think so. Everything I go through, the answer is I don't think we want to be making those cuts. Why don't we want to cut road patrols? Well, the reason we don't want to cut road patrols is if we cut road patrols, then nobody else does road patrols. There's nobody there to take over. There's nobody else to provide legal services to the indigent. All of the things that we do in the public safety division are things that nobody else is going to do if we don't do it. Recreation. We talked a lot about recreation last year. We thought about cutting that, and then we didn't cut it as much. Is there anybody else to step up if we decide to cut those things? The answer is no. So where in the world are we going to find $2.5 or $3 million of things to cut which will not harm the quality of life of the people that we have to do? And there's one place that has come up, okay, that this CHA, the work that this CHA does, can be done by some other agency. And in that way, we have $400,000 less cuts to make in the other programs than we would if we retain it. That, to me, is the sentence that drives my decision-making, that we must make these cuts. There's no way of avoiding it. We can call up the legislature and tell them to do something different, but they're not going to do something different. In the end, we're going to end up making whatever it is, $2.5-3 million of cuts. And if we retain this thing, we're going to have to put $400,000 into it. And that means that there's $400,000 of other cuts that we're going to have to make in road patrols or emergency response systems or the other programs of the health department. I mean, we just don't have that fact. This is the only program where someone is going to step up and do it if we don't. There isn't another one. Now, what have people said? People have said, well, we do it better than the other programs, than the people who are going to step up and do it will. I honestly have no idea whether that statement is true or not. I believe we do quality programs in the county, but I don't really know about private providers of this service. So what am I to do? I certainly can't learn about health care delivery before making my vote. What I have to do is what's called evidence-based decision-making. That's what we ought to do. And the evidence that I've seen shows that there is no reason to believe that a private owner of this CHA will do anything significantly worse than we have been doing. And it's even, some of the evidence says that they'll do it somewhat better. I don't think they'll do it markedly better, but the evidence is that there will not be significant change to the service that our residents receive. Now, I find that a very compelling argument. People say, well, they don't think so, but in fact, there is no evidence that I have seen that tells me that that statement is untrue. Given that, I mean, another thing that I have heard about is our obligation to the 10 nurses or so who will be cut from this. Don't we owe something to them? Well, you know, nurses are people who don't go without jobs. There are not enough nurses in this country. And in fact, what's going to happen if we divest is that the same operation will be taken over by a private person. In the transition period, we will, as I understand it, we will hire the person that buys our charter or whatever it's called, our license, and they'll run it for us. And I would certainly assume that someone who's running it for us would use the same nurses that they already employ. I can't imagine why not. So given these things, I think that there will not be significant harm to the residents that are being served by our CHA, that I think that I see no reason to believe that the nurses that we now employ will not find employment with the private CHA. And for that reason, and realizing that these cuts must be made. They must be made. And it seems to me that I can't think of a place to make a cut that will be less damaging to the people who our job is to protect than by transferring the license of the CHA. And so for that reason, I'm going to vote for doing it.
Thank you, Peter. Brian, Leslin, and then we'll take Dooley and go around for people who haven't had a turn. Brian?
I'm going to bring the tone of things down just a little bit. I don't view this as an end to a program or anything. This truly is, in my view, the beginning of this budget season. And let's just deal with some things that we know. Let's say, for example, we end up at the end of the day with a supermajority of us and agree to make cuts that conform to the 5.4 budget or tax increase. That is going to make us find $3.2 million worth of cuts in this year's budget. If this program, the CHA, continues, and let's say for the sake of argument that operating subsidies can go down from $400,000 to $200,000. That represents 1/16, or a little bit north of 6% of the cuts that we are going to have to make to get to 5.4, which is not a given. I take, personally, I try to keep feelings, personalities, all of that sort of stuff out of it. Otherwise, it'll drive you crazy. Yeah. So I try not to do that. Simply looking at the numbers and the functions, I take some solace in knowing that at least to whatever degree that it can be done, that this is all subjective stuff, but that function is going to take place. That cannot be said for the roughly 93% of the additional cuts that we have to make. And we have no idea even what those are. I do want to point out one little thing that Dooley actually said to me as we were leaving the meeting 2 weeks ago. And she paid me a compliment and said, hey, I liked what you said in the meeting. And what I had said were words to the effect that, hey, folks, we are going to have to make decisions with our heads and not our hearts. I think our hearts, all of our hearts here, would be to keep the CHA. My head tells me that that's not possible, that I can take comfort in knowing that this service is going to be provided, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of the rest of it where we can expect somebody else to provide these services.
Thank you, Brian. Leslie?
Oh, boy. So I'm having a really hard time with this this resolution. And Brian, my heart and head kind of walk hand in hand a lot of times because mm-hmm. we serve people. And when they're people, there's some heart that go with it. I find it difficult to feel that just because this is perhaps the easiest, and as Frank said, the low-hanging fruit, that it becomes sort of the sacrificial lamb. We started our budget process last year when this was a part of the discussion about what we're going to do. But I didn't see anything else sitting on the table as well. I'm an equal opportunity cutter. I'm happy to cut things that matter to me, are priorities to me, and there's no secret about it. You know, infrastructure, public safety, those things matter to me, and I'm happy to put those things on the table as well. Human services matter, and I'm happy to put things on the table for that as well. Which I'm not sure is I can say the same. Well, I probably can for everybody, but I know for myself that's where it is. I have to really respectfully disagree that there are no other services that we fund that cannot be done or picked up elsewhere. Because we can. We have things that we categorize as mandated things that we just mandates we have to do, because the state says we have to do, and we don't touch those. We understand that. But we have a whole bunch of other responsibilities that we've taken on that we know other people can take on. And we know that can be done. So I don't necessarily agree with that argument. I'm hearing about the budget and how are we going to find this money. And I'm just going to put it out there because I'm already hearing it, and I know I'll hear it some more, that, you know, Lesnar, what are you prepared to cut? Or you had the opportunity to reduce our deficit by cutting the chan, you didn't, and I'm going to hear it. And I know I'm going to hear sort of, you know, some of that blame being pushed, you know, here. I'm just going to be frank about it. But that's not what it's about. I've thought long and hard about this. And yeah, there's a lot of personal investment. There's a lot of personal connection. There's a lot of personal understanding and experience with how this program has worked as compared to some other private programs. And I don't think it's the same. I do not believe it's the same. Look, folks, we just voted tonight to appropriate $215,000 from our contingency fund to continue the COPS program through the end of the year because the state has cut back their portion to it. We just did that. So I know that we make decisions a lot of times based on who's being served and what's going on. I cannot support divesting the child. I cannot support that. I think this is a program we serve. We're in the business of serving this our constituents, the community. We are in this business. This is an important piece of it. Some of the most vulnerable people in our community are the people we're talking about here. And I'm not even, the staff doesn't even rank right now to me. I am talking about the people who we serve, and yes, we'll need staff to do that. And that is important. So, yeah, Brian, my head and my heart go hand in hand when I'm making certain decisions about what I was elected to do, service to the people of Tompkins County. So I'm having a hard time with just thinking that this is what we're going to do, especially at this time when we are just going to chop this one out, and then on the budget floor, okay, we've already gotten rid of this much of it, then we have this much left to spread around everybody else. I'd like to see everybody on the same playing field at the same time during the budget process. If we want to put the chine at that time, right along with public safety and highway and weights and measures and everybody else, let's just put them all out there at the same time. And let's just go for it and see what we're going to do, as opposed to what feels to me like a step ahead of everything else with a service that's just going to disappear. And I cannot be comfortable with that. Every year when TC3 comes to us, this is probably the first year that I have voted for the TC3 budget. And I understand because of their fiscal year where it is. Because I feel the same way. It's like, why am I voting on this outside of the budget process? It just feels like you've gotten your share now, everybody else we have to deal with. And I understand the nuances that go with it. But it's difficult, and I don't feel like we should be doing this at this time. Frank, I want to agree with you, and I really wish that you had brought an amendment or a resolution to the effect of, you know, let's do this for another 2 years and give this program the opportunity, as Sigrid so ably put together in her proposal of how they can make this work. So I wish that you had done that, because that is one thing I would support. I don't know if it's something we can do now for another 2 years to see where it will go. So I have a whole lot more to say, but it's late and we have other people. I'm trying to keep it down, like Brian said.
Okay. I think we haven't heard from Julie, Pam, Pat, Dave, Mike, Will, Carol, Kathy, or me. So those are the folks we're going to go around and talk to, and Joe, if you want to say something, I put you in there too. So I'd like to go around and just, and you don't have to speak, but we'll go in that order. Julie.
Thank you. Well, our county administrator framed this discussion for the legislature quite a long time ago, and he's stuck to moving us along at a quite a brisk pace, actually, even though it seems like it's taken a long time. Jim and Nate spoke first in favor of divesting. I'd like to point out that the resolution that's on the floor authorizes authorization to divest in the health care agency, which is an interesting Freudian slip. One invests in something, one divests from. So you may want to change that later. But it was framed during tonight's discussion very much as a financial decision, a fiscal decision. Both Jim and Nate mentioned $400,000. And my memo that the public hasn't seen, I just sent it to legislators, talked about the fiscal aspects and the unknowns about the time flow of money from a sale and backfilling new expenses that we will have with a sale. I strongly agree with what Leslin just said and what Frank said earlier. This should be part of our budget discussion. My initial preference was to say, let's put this off until we get into the budget heavily this fall. It was Brenda's plaintive wish to have a decision so she would know how to prepare the department's budget for Joe's massaging that persuaded me that I should put in a motion to simply continue the child, which is what I feel at this point is the right thing to do, but I would be much happier if we were doing this as part of the regular budget process. A division in our department is not the same as TC3. They have a different fiscal year. We have to do them separately, but this doesn't have to be done separately. I would very much like to see our new health department director given the chance that he said he wished he had to work with this division and trying to make it more efficient, make whatever other changes he can think of. I mean, he has that ability to do it with the whole department. He's not going to get the chance to do it with the CHA, and I think he should have that chance. I certainly will not support this resolution to divest from the CHA. I think that once this is gone, which is what will happen, we're not going to get it back, and I think it is a very important part of the greater Ithaca community, the greater Tompkins County community. We have to think in terms of being more regionally self-sufficient in so many ways because of my deepest worry, which is climate change. And this is just a part of that local need that I think we should not ignore and hand off to another entity based somewhere else, even if they're more efficient because they're bigger, because the unquantifiable things that having this CHA part of our government brings is so important to me, too. So, thanks.
Thank you, Julie. Pam?
Well, I have a similar objection of having this separated out from the rest of all of the many things that we're going to have to look at and cut. And so I do not think it's an appropriate time for us to be doing this. I think that we are fooling ourselves if we think that privatizing is going to create equal or better product. I mean, I thought there were people in this room who were in favor of single-payer health care because it would function better And yet we are going in the opposite direction here. We are going towards privatization, and that just makes no sense to me at all. I think I had I really liked what Julie wrote in her memo to us, because I think it reflects what I had this uneasy feeling about, and this often happens in our situations where we go at something and we and it is painted as being the solution to our problems, and all of the downsides of it, all of the hidden expenses are hidden, and we end up not saving money, and sometimes we end up in a worse situation. And I will not support this. I think that we should continue to fund the CHA for the rest of the year. I think it should be part of our budget process. I think that we need to look at the cuts in that, you know, in the kinds of savings that they can make in the department, and perhaps that we can come up with some more. But to cut it off at this point, I just don't. It doesn't even make good sense to me in terms of emergency preparedness. I mean, if we're talking about emergency preparedness, are we talking about disaster that we have these nurses on our staff? And what do we think we will do that's what we do in our society. We plan for disaster. And certainly these nurses are an important function as part of that. And I think this has not... As much as work has gone into this, and Frank, I want to thank you for really putting it out there and helping us go through this, and certainly Joe, too. But I do not think that we should just rush, and I think it is rushing forward, to eliminate this program when I don't think that we've considered all of the costs and the implications of ending it.
Thank you, Pam. Pat?
Thank you, Martha. As many people have spoken, it's to the point where it's difficult to think of something that hasn't already been said. Many of you probably know that up until yesterday, I honestly hadn't decided how I was going to vote on this. And since I made the decision that I am going to support divesting, I have asked myself several times how I feel about that decision and if I want to rethink it. And I honestly have to say that I don't like the decision. I'm not happy about the fact that we are where we are. However, I do feel comfortable with having made what I think is the only realistic decision that I could make under the circumstances. The one thing that I have thought about and I haven't heard mentioned is I've tried to think about, well, suppose that we were to do something as Frank has suggested and take some more time and see if we can achieve the savings that we would like to achieve over the next couple of years. My best guess is at this point that even if we were to be able to do that, the cost for us to continue to run the CHA are going to go steadily upward. I just think that any cost savings we might achieve will become immaterial over time, in the sense that the other costs of keeping the CHA will only continue to increase. And I'm thinking particularly of things like pension costs and healthcare costs and so on, but pension especially. That's something that costs us more than a private company. And there's nothing we can do about that. That's just the way it is. We can't save on that, no matter what we want to try to do. So I feel in a sense as if the whole notion of taking the time is kind of grasping at straws, in the sense that yes, we might be able to achieve those savings, but in the end, 2 years down the road, I have a feeling we'd end up in the same place we are right now, looking at the same kind of very tough decision all over again. I could be wrong, but that's what it feels like. I have to agree that this is one of certainly very few of the programs that we do here in the county that will continue. The service will continue. Whether or not we continue to operate it, the service will continue. I don't think that the quality of the service will be as good as it is now, flat out. I think that we do a better job than I think will be done by a private job. But as Nathan was very articulate about harm, when you think about harm, I think we have to think about the entire community. And much as I would like to just focus on the patients of our CHA, I think we have to look at the bigger picture of who would be harmed by the fact that operating the CHA will force us into a situation where we have fewer resources to support other programs that are of real benefit to the community. So I could go on, but I'm not going to. It's getting late, and I think there are a lot of reasons that have already been stated. I am going to support this. I don't like having to do it, but I do think it is the right thing to do.
Thank you, Pat. Dave?
I guess the first thing that I'd like to say is, has anybody around this table been downsized? I have. It's not a very nice feeling. I think we're being beguiled by easy money. Okay. Do we really want to send a message to our employees that we'll sell you out for a few bucks after years of loyalty? That's just my comment on the thing. I am not in favor of this. Yes, it makes good financial sense, makes lousy personal sense, so I'm not going to vote for it.
Thank you, Dave. Mike?
People matter. Brian, I wish it was as easy to separate our feelings from the figures as we can, but it's people that matter. Our employees are people, and the elderly ladies who called me up at my office and said, please don't divest because I really need the county nurse program in order to function in my home, they matter, and they hurt when I hear that. I've followed the information that we've had, and Frank, you're right, we've had a load of it, and I'd like to commend you on your advocacy here, Frank. Because you feel passionate about this, and I think that's a good thing, even though I don't, in the end, agree with you on the end of this. What we do, we should never take lightly. I don't think we're doing that. I think the reason we're all speaking tonight is because we aren't taking this lightly. I agree, Frank, this is not a political kind of thing. We all hurt on a decision like this, but that's why we're here, to make the kind of decisions that have to be made under the circumstances that we have. I would rather that we could continue the home health care agency. I sort of liked it when we had a county hospital, and sort of liked it when we had a county farm that took care of people. I think that was something that was good and compassionate. And I imagine when the County Board of Representatives talked about divesting of those two things, the county farm closing that down and the hospital merging that into a not-for-profit, I think there was a lot of hand-wringing and upset over that kind of decision, too, just as with this. We've moved to a situation where healthcare has become an industry, whether we like it or not. That's why our health insurance premiums are so terribly high, because this is where we're employing people. We aren't employing them in factories. We're employing them in service. That's a fact. It just is that way. we're squeezed here, and it is the state's fault. I'm sorry. They can have some choices up there that they can make that doesn't necessarily have to involve putting the local municipalities and school districts through a ringer, which is what's happening to us. But they have chosen to do that. And so we have to work, as someone else said, with what's been, with the hand that's, we have to play with the hand that's been dealt to us. And I think that's correct. And the hand tonight says that we have to look for the cut. And it's bad because it helps, it hurts people, it hurts employees, and it hurts some of the folks out there that are used to our county services. I wish I could make that better, but based on the evidence I have, I think I have to vote to divest it.
Thank you, Mike. I think we're up to Will.
Thank you. I'll make this short because almost everything that I thought to say has been said very aptly by someone else. Peter, that aphorism has been going through my brain for the past week since I came to the conclusion that we need to divest. As many of you know, I spent the better part of this year doing just the opposite. I really believe that we have a quality program. I think we have an extraordinary staff. I do not believe that whatever, it's going to be easy to replicate that or serve, deliver service that is this good. Now, I know some of you will argue statistically that you know there's data saying that this can be done, but I think we have a wonderful investment and a very, very good team. And those folks are going to be hurt. And these are good-paying jobs. They're with pensions. Ironically, some of the people that are actually most intimately associated with the program have the potential to bump others. And, you know, it will it'll play out in ways that will be disruptive to the department. And, Frank, I do not, I do not wish you bad, but you're going to have a difficult year, I'm sure, in terms of making this adjustment if we go this course. But unfortunately, I think we do have to play the hand that's been dealt us. It is a terrible hand. But after thinking about it and weighing it, I just could not, in good conscience, vote to continue spending money in this way when we had an option that was somewhat good. And, you know, it's very sad that we're in this state. I want to thank all of you, though, that have taken time to come out to these meetings and read these reports, Frank especially, for the extraordinary job you did in getting us to think about different aspects of this, and encouraging us to really, really take this seriously. I know this has not been an easy decision for any of us, and I hope that we have many, many more decisions that are going to be very, very difficult in the coming months. And I hope we continue to approach those with the same level of intelligence and care as we're doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Carol.
I don't know if I can be short.
That's right. Nobody else has been.
There is no issue that I have agonized more about than this one. I think because it touches me and my life in a very personal way. I don't know if I'm the only one here who's ever actually had to use about the decision, you know, the legislature has actually had to use some visiting care services and had nurses come in. Chantelise asked, should patients be served by care that is public or private? And that's very clear to me. I believe that it is the right thing to do to have the option to serve patients with care that is public, and that ought to be an option. And I am just appalled that we're even here having to agonize and decide this. We have talked about this decision in terms of the dollars it's going to save today, and the fact that today, I actually fully believe that today and for the next few years,
this service, I'm convinced that this service can be provided by one of these agencies we've heard from in a way that our patients are not going to immediately suffer. For me, the issue is not today, but the future, because I do believe that the private sector, as it takes over services, the dynamic is that there are pressures to make it more cost-effective, to bring in more money for their shareholders or their company or whoever it is. And I don't trust that this is one that in the future, if we're not happy, that we'll be able to get back. And I believe that some of those other services that we're having to cut this year, when times are more flush, that we might be able to bring those back. And I'm very, very fearful of the fact that we won't be able to bring this one back. I hope I can trust that if we get to that point, the decision is made, and that if we get to that point and there is a greater call for that kind of care, that different decisions would be made. But I also have had to ask, you know, I believe we should be keeping this as a public service, but like the rest of us, we've had to ask, can we do it? And I came to last week's meeting, having read all of the various options of the proposals, assuming that we were going to find some compromise that would revolve around the timing, and that we would look at a way and come to an agreement about how much time to give this and what level of efficiencies and loss of the bleeding of the budget we needed to see by a certain time. And I was quite surprised to hear that those who'd considered that and spent more time on it than I had seemed to say that wasn't an option. As a matter of fact, the answer that I heard was that the only thing that there seemed to be unanimity of response to my question, and I stayed up at that podium for a long time asking the question in different ways about the timing. What could we do? From both those who thought we should divest and those who thought we shouldn't, was we've got to decide now. We can't make a compromise that says, give it another year, give it another 2 years, here's the benchmark. That wasn't possible to do, even from those who thought that we ought to keep it. I think that it's, I don't agree with Frank, and this, I agree with Frank that it would be better to keep it. But I don't agree that this is not subject to federal and state pressures. I think it's supremely scary that we are talking about privatizing some of the most basic services that people come to depend on government for. You know, we're charging people when fire trucks come to their houses in some parts of the country, or ambulances, you know, who can't afford it. We're talking about privatizing this. I think it's appalling and scary, and I can't believe I'm in office in a time where that's what we've got to face. But I am. I don't share, however, the sense that we need to have this in place for true disasters. The one thing that I do think this country has a very strong history of doing is stepping up when there is a true, appalling, horrible disaster. Volunteers come out. You know, 9/11, we had people come knowing that there were toxic things coming out of that pile, and people came out. Flu epidemics, you know, I think people will be there regardless of whether it's public or private. So that's not one that's influenced me. For me, this is a very, very personal decision because I have needed this care. And because I have health issues now, I have joints and fingers that are failing. I have no confidence that 20 years from now, having made the decisions I've made to
earn the big bucks on the county legislature, that I'm going to be able to afford private care, even with the long-term care insurance I've got. And I already have trouble giving myself some very painful shots I have to give myself every week. And I am going to need somebody to be there to help me do those. And I hope it's going to be there. But, so I'm arguing for keeping it, but I just don't feel that we can. I just don't feel that, given the realities that we're facing, and given that we can't find a compromise on the timing, that we're being asked to make a decision today and on what we know today with the care that is out there and somebody else prepared to probably hire our nurses, I'm going to have to reluctantly vote to give it up.
Thank you, Carol. Kathy?
Thank you. I think it comes as a surprise to anybody in this room that I won't vote to divest. The fact is, I think that we've got an opportunity here. I listened to the remarks that were made tonight. I've gone over all the material. I'm very much in admiration of the people who put so much work into this. I heard a couple of people say interesting things. One person said that there were 50 people that couldn't be served, which tells me that we really wouldn't have a whole lot of trouble marketing this and improving our position in this investment to sell it at a higher price sooner rather than later if we have to. I understand it's a big deal and that people confronted with these kind of budgetary decisions quail and want to decide something. I understand that this is a long process and many people are tired of it. I would have liked for it to go into the budget season. I would have liked to have given the health department the opportunity to develop this stellar program that contributes so much to the quality of life in our community. And as an advocate of government in the small g sense, the kind of government that I was raised to believe in, that helps a community be more of what it really is, keeping the CHA is something that I would strive to do. I have a friend that's a social justice advocate, and she says, when people are fighting over slices of the pie, what do you do? I said, I don't know. She said, make another pie. And that's exactly what the people in the health department have said they would do, that they would use their creativity and their experience and their dedication to come up with solutions to the problem that we face. I admit, just like most people around this table admit, that healthcare is a screwed up system. It's costing us disproportionately too much. I, however, don't like the notion of blaming employees or blaming necessarily the state government for the difficult decision that we have to make. I think, I'm from Texas. They privatize the roads there. They privatize public safety there. They privatize everything because they think they can save money. And they have, to a large extent, a terrible education system and terrific roads where they have rich people to pay for them, to pay the taxes for them, or to pay for the private funding of them. But their schools are terrible. And the quality of life for people who are not of means is not good. And what government does, the way I was raised to believe it, is it helps smooth it out so that people who aren't of means can have opportunities. And that's, after all, what this country's about. And this walking away from the CHA is not a legacy that I want to be part of. I got this great certificate tonight. I would like to have a legacy of my time on the legislature and have it be being true to the ideals of single-payer health care, have it being true to the ideals of quality of life in a community, even when sometimes we have to think outside the box and trust each other a little more and take some risks. I'm not going to take the easy way out on this and say I've agonized over this personally. This wasn't that hard for me. I looked at the data, and I see that there can be data on both sides of this, and for me, yeah, head and heart work together. And sure, I'm passionate, which is, to my way of thinking, a little bit of a way of saying that someone isn't thinking clearly. In my culture, passion goes well with living a good life and caring about other people and trying to figure out how to share what you have with people less fortunate than you. So no contest here. We should not be divesting right now. At the very worst, and I would agree with some of the comments that Carol made, we should try to push this decision out to put ourselves in a better financial position, to allow staff to show us what they can do. That's what they're begging for. And to allow our community a chance to adjust to this so that we can figure out how to help each other through this. We got an innovative community with great talents. What's the deal here? Well, okay, oops, I'm supposed to speak with respect, and I do respect my colleagues. I know this is a hard decision for many of y'all. For me and my values, I would not divest in the CHA at this time, and I won't support this resolution.
Thank you, Kathy. So, did you want to add anything?
No. There's a part of me that wants to weigh in on this, and I don't need to. This has been a rich, informed debate. Mm-hmm. Our goal from the moment that this was identified as an issue a year ago was to make sure that a debate like this could happen with you armed with good information, certainly coming from different perspectives and places, but armed with information that you would need to make a difficult decision like this. There are many of us in this room that have offered you advice, perspective, data, and so forth. To your credit, I think you've looked at it all.
Yeah.
So I'm really pleased. I know how difficult this decision is. I hope you agree that the process that has led you to this point has been fair, objective one. And so rather than weighing in on the issue itself, I would just like to say that it's really appreciated and it's unique the way an issue like this has been addressed by this body. And I think when you're done, at least we can all say that a very informed, careful decision was made.
Thank you, Joe. I would agree with that. This is one of those issues where I think we all disagree with each other, with ourselves, from time to time. I know Carol maybe agonized longer than anybody, but I think we've all agonized over this one. As Frank said, it's not a Democratic or Republican issue. It's not a progressive or conservative. There's not one ideology, I think, that tells you which way to vote. I would say, the big picture is really a structural issue that we are handed by the state, that we, in order to avoid cuts in our programs, we would have to raise the levy 13%. I know some people would actually do that here. But in order to go above whatever the cap is that they're probably voting on right now, we need 9, not 8. 8 is to pass a budget. We need 9 just to go a little bit over the cap. So if we were to go, if we weren't going to cut, we'd have to raise taxes 13%. That's the frame that we're in. So that's why, to me, it is as Nathan said, this is the least harm. There's just no way we could, get 9 votes to go to 13%. The order of magnitudes are so large. The number of staff we will have to cut, even to go to 5.5%, 5.4%, we'll have to cut 43 people. 43 staff people. And those are people who aren't going to be able to get jobs easily and clearly whose services won't be replaced, will not be picked up in any other way. There's been a lot of discussion about why isn't this part of the budget process. Staff asked us for this timeline, and we've done this. I want to point out that we've spent way more time on this decision, not a minute too long, but way more time on this decision than we will be able to spend on all the other decisions in the budget next fall, this coming fall. So we this is the business we're in. So it's not a brisk pace. It's been a pace that we had to do to keep going and get to our goal. This is not an issue about the one-shot funding, about whether we, and Joe has been very careful, not even to barely talk about, and talk only when asked about what the license might bring in terms of revenue, because it is a long-term decision. It's, and we cannot look at it in terms of the, you know, what's the cash flow going to be. It's a more important decision for longer than just 1 year. We've not seen it as a way to pick up revenue. It's been a way to, this decision is a way to cut the subsidy so that other programs might have a better chance of surviving. We have been putting cash into this program for years, so this is also not a surprise or something new. I would also say language matters. We're not eliminating the program. The program will be taken over by somebody else. And about single payer, the government doesn't provide all the care in a single payer system. It pays for the care. It doesn't actually employ all the providers. So it's not the same thing. Finally, I will say Alice Cole, former director of the health department, used to say that we have to pick the things that we can do. We can't keep doing everything. And as Joe has pointed out, our mission statement says that we are to do the things that no one else can or will do. This is one out of, what do we have, 300 programs? One out of 300 programs that I have confidence that we all know will still be done, and will still be done adequately. And this decision will help us to save other services that wouldn't otherwise be done. I'll call for the vote in a minute. I think we've been talking, getting close to 2 hours. I'd really like to call for a vote. I want to just point out that if divestiture is approved tonight, the legislature will stay involved with drafting the RFP. The staff will be involved certainly with that. The people's values will be reflected in that. I think we are, we've certainly heard that we want to require that staff be given the opportunity to interview for a job, for the jobs in the new agency, and other values of our community will certainly be reflected in the RFP, and that would be the next step of the process if we are to take this step. Very quickly, Dooley and Frank.
Madam Chair, you brought up the 13% as tax levy increase to keep all of our programs, but you didn't tell the public what that would mean in terms of dollars. And since county taxes are a relatively small amount of the property tax that people pay, I think they deserve to know what it would cost to keep our programs intact, more or less. 13% tax levy increase on what I understand is our average home property of $160,000 would cost an additional $138 to the owner of that $160,000 home. That's all.
Okay. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move to substitute Resolution N for Resolution K.
Is there a second?
Seconded
by Dooley. All right.
Okay.
That is to keep the chow. All in favor of Resolution N, of substituting Resolution N, please raise your hand.
Wait, I'm sorry. Can we just have a second to remember what N is?
Packet page is 21. It is to keep the chow.
And
it's essentially the same as Dooley.
And it's not any of those, so can I just to clarify, it's not any of those that talk about giving a certain amount of time or setting
no.
benchmarks.
You could amend it to say that.
It's on page one.
You could amend it, Carol. We talked about that earlier today. Go for it.
Well,
All right. We have to see if this will get on the floor before we can amend it.
Well,
no. It's been moved and seconded. We need to vote to substitute. So the vote before you is to substitute N and be able to discuss that one instead of K. All in favor of substituting N, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That fails 6-9. Carol?
Yeah, if there were somebody here who had been, who was on the committee, who heard all of the material and who came out with a different sense than I did of what we were told, even by staff who don't want to divest, about the timing,
We both heard it different than you did.
Well, Brenda, do you want to talk about the timing?
Or a substitution? But that's not what I hear on the floor here.
We heard it different than you.
All right. We have Resolution K on the floor. Jim?
All I really want to hear from you, Carol, is what do you mean by timing? That's all. Ask someone to respond to a direct question.
There were some.
What do you mean by
there
timing?
Were some motions in front of the committee last week that had to do with giving a certain amount of time or coming, I think, to certain benchmarks, not making a decision now, saying we will divest unless you get to a point where within
a certain
amount of
time. Carol, that was defeated by the committee.
And that was defeated, and I thought I heard unanimity. And if somebody from the committee who understood those better than I obviously do would like to move those, I am offering that I would, that something like that I would support.
Mike,
I'd like to call the question.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. What's before us is whether to call a question. Please raise your hand if you're ready to do that.
What's the question?
The question is voting on Resolution K. That's what's in front of us.
What did you ask us to raise our
hand? All in favor of calling the question, okay, ending debate on Resolution K. Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Not sure I'm understanding what we're voting on.
We're calling the question on K. Opposed?
Okay.
Please raise your hand. One,
opposed.
Two, three.
Opposed.
Opposed.
Opposed to calling the question.
Yeah,
there's a lot of noise in a room, so I'm just asking for clarification.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
There was a motion to call the question.
I understand that. What did you just ask for?
I asked who's opposed.
Thank you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That doesn't sound right.
I'm voting to call the question.
All right. Will,
Can we do that again?
Let us do it again. All in favor of calling the question on Resolution K, please raise your hand. All in favor of calling the question on Resolution K, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. It is time to vote on Resolution K.
May we have a roll call, Madam Chair?
Yes. Kevin?
Mrs. McBean, Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Keeper?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsee?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
9 ayes, 6 noes.
I want to thank everybody for the respect and dedication to this decision that we've seen tonight, and thank the staff in particular, and We look forward to working on the RFP with through the committee and with the staff on that. Thank you all very much. We have
Martha. I just really do want to say a quick thank you. It's really hard to hear these people are talking to the innumerable people in the community who paid attention to this issue and called and sent emails and text messages and showed up to speak to us. It was good government, and I really do appreciate that from folks, and hope that people will do the same thing as we deal with the rest of our budget.
Yep.
So amen. Just please speak out. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. All right. We're going to go to committee reports. Planning, development, and environmental, Pam is gone. All right. We'll skip that one. Jim, do you have a report for budget, capital, and personnel?
No, I don't. There's a meeting Monday afternoon at 3:30. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Peter Stein, Public Safety Committee Chair.
Let's see. We did the resolution B in consent, right? Or did you pull that?
Mm-hmm. No, that was done.
Okay, it was done. So we have a couple of. There was a resolution that was added to the agenda. Do we do that now? Is that right?
Yes,
it was approved
and
by
H.
By the Public Safety Committee today.
You have H. Secure communities.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about. So I'd like to move that.
Okay, would you read the title?
Second.
Let's see. We have an amended version
of H.
Of H, yes. Kathy, do you have that? I'm trying to look for it. It's called K, Resolution K.
No, Resolution K. Be happy to vote on that one again.
Yeah, let's have a do-over.
Reintroduce it.
Nice, sneaky one, Peter.
Right, here we go. Resolution H, as revised and adopted by the Public Safety Committee. And it's a request that Governor Cuomo rescind the Secure Communities Memorandum of Agreement between New York State and the Department of Homeland Security, period.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Leslin seconds that. All right. Is there discussion? Frank.
Just a quick one. Thank you, Martha. The committee was not unanimous on that, Peter. Could we have an explanation as to why?
Well, there was a difference of opinion.
No.
What a deep thing.
Okay. Having said that.
No, smile on Sherlock.
And I'm glad somebody voted their opinion.
I think the vote was 4-1, and I don't remember any statement by the one as to why that vote was that way. I don't know if he'd like to make a statement. Brian?
Sure. I'm not. I understand the concerns and the arguments. Trust me, I do. I guess what I have a problem with is that our beef is not with our state representatives and so forth. I guess what it comes down to are two things. Comprehensive immigration reform, one, which is federal, and the agreement between the FBI fingerprint database repository and allowing the flow of information to go from that to ICE. That was an agreement through Homeland Security, or a mandate, actually, to Homeland Security. What we do here locally isn't going to change. When someone is arrested for a crime, they have to be fingerprinted. They have to be. Those fingerprints have to be submitted to state DCJS and the FBI. We have no control over that. They have to be. where, so locally, nothing can change. This is a problem between the FBI and ICE and what they do with that information. And as a as someone that's been in the enforcement side of the law for a long time, for me to be able to sign on to something to say, I don't care what you say, we're not going to do it. I come from the world where we don't make the laws, we enforce them. So for us to put for us to tell the folks that work for us to disregard a law, they can't do it. They can't do it. They don't have to sign on to this program. You know, we don't, as a county, have to sign on to this program. But we still have to do what it is that the law tells us we have to do, which has not changed.
Where does it say what you just are objecting to in the resolution?
I guess what I was reading was not the resolves, but the whereases, and as it relates to the memorandum and participating law enforcement agencies to use fingerprint-based biometric technology all through there.
Isn't the issue, though, that yes, we have the fingerprint, but we otherwise don't have to share the data with DHS, with Department of Homeland Security? Right. Is that the issue? I think that's the issue.
Yeah, but we're not sharing it with them. We are sending it to the FBI as per what's always been done. And, yep, you see what I'm saying? So what we do locally has not changed.
Okay, we have Brian.
What they do with that information, they're changing.
Okay, Peter and Leslie and Carol?
I see the point that Brian is making, but I honestly don't think it's relevant to
it's
this.
Not.
This is a resolution that asks the governor to do something or not to do something, and I don't think it asks or instructs our local police to do anything or not do anything. The resolve clauses, I don't think, do not speak to your concern. If you look at the resolve clauses.
Leslie?
Peter, thank you. I have to agree with you, Brian. I couldn't figure out where you were going with it, because this doesn't have anything to do with what we have to currently do with the FBI. That's procedure. That's what's happening. This is about a memorandum on a very specific program with DHS, Department of Homeland Security. It doesn't have anything to do with what you're referring to, so I was a little confused. But, you know, exactly what Peter pointed out.
Thank you, Leslie. Carol?
Yeah, Peter said a bunch of what I was going to say. My sense of this resolution is that we are asking the governor to rescind what he's agreed to. And I think who better than us to ask the governor for that? Those of us who are in a community where we see the effects of this, where we have some firsthand knowledge of the effects on our residents and on our law enforcement, that we are the best ones to weigh in on this and to ask him. And I don't read this as us instructing our law enforcement to disobey their instructions. So I support it.
Okay. Okay. Are we ready to vote?
Yeah.
All in favor of resolution revised H, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? That's 2, 13 to 2. This passes. Okay. Brian and Frank. Peter?
I have yet another resolution.
Okay.
This is that was added to the agenda, endorsement of legislative bills S-5804 and A-8290A relating to service retirement benefits for persons engaged in criminal law employed in the office of the Tompkins County District Attorney. This is a technical...
And I so move. Is there a second? Jim seconds. And Jim seconds that. Okay. Go ahead, Peter.
It's a technical issue having to do with the timing of something that we passed previously at the last meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Brian?
Can I just suggest a change in the title? This person is not really going to be... criminal law suggests that they're a lawyer versus criminal law enforcement.
Enforcement.
Joe, do you know whether there are rules about this has to match the state's bill, right?
You know what, though? I think Brian is caught. I think it should say law enforcement.
Okay.
I'm looking at the final resolve is the bill name.
The last way around.
And everything down below it speaks to enforcement. So.
Yes.
Oh. Oh, yeah, it sounds like it, right.
Okay, so with that...
Right.
Friendly to Peter and Jim?
Yeah.
Okay.
I say thank God or we would have had to pass it at the next meeting.
You're probably right.
Just trying to help you out with this issue, that's all.
All right. Ready to vote? All in favor of P, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five. 10-5, that passes. Okay, thank you. Anything else, Peter?
We're having a meeting on the 30th of June.
What time?
At 3:30, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
June 30th. 3:30. That takes the place of the July 4th meeting?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Peter. Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee, Pam Magazzicci.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Our next meeting is on the 6th of July, and that's all I have to report.
All right. Thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Clairborn, Chair.
We will be meeting tomorrow, the 22nd, at the Bevelay State Conference Room in the Human Services Building at 3:30.
Okay, thank you. Frank, well, Human Services Committee, Frank, do you have, I can't believe you have a report. Okay.
Health and Human Services has met twice, as most of you know. I just want to highlight two items of the June 8th meeting. The first is we had an extensive update on youth services by Amy. It was very good. They're going to embark on another survey, and that may entail a little more work for us on the committee. The second was Ken Slaughter came from Cooperative Extension and gave us an update on local foods for low-income folks program that they're doing. We took the opportunity also to listen to Dina Bodner regarding, remember two years ago we got into the rural transit where we wanted to extend service through DSS into Newfield and Enfield, and they had some grant money through the JARC money. We had an update from Dina regarding that program, and while it continues to be a little expensive per ride, the numbers show that there's an increased usage of it. I'll be able to give you more of a report in the future on that. In the interest of time, I really don't want to go into it. She's given us a sheet that we can, maybe between Karen and I, we can resurrect it and get it around to you. The second meeting, obviously, was the one on the CHA. The second meeting was the one where we invited in the individual, the individuals from HCR because they weren't able to come to the previous one. And you've heard most of that tonight, and we won't go, obviously, through that. And the COPS resolution that Joe has already outlined.
The next meeting of the committee is the 13th of July. And I think I will end there.
Thank you, Frank. Facilities and
with one caveat. I want to thank Joe specifically for all the work that he did on pulling all the information together on the chart. I know we sparred a lot, but really, you really deserve a thank you. And the committee for all its patience in putting up with you. So, no, all kidding aside. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Frank.
You bet.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Schott, Chair.
We're going to meet July 1st at 9:30 a.m. back in the usual spot, the old jail.
Okay, thank you. Capital Plan Review Committee met on June 9th. I'm afraid I have some things I have to share with you. It's going to take a minute here. The last time we talked, we were talking about that we reported to you that we were looking at what would be the tenancy in the court in the Human Services Annex, the COFA building. And it was requested that we try really hard to see whether day reporting could go into the annex along with COFA. We did that. There were several extra meetings between committee meetings and some more work done by AREL. For space reasons as well as programmatic reasons, day reporting does not fit into the COFA, into what would be the other side of the COFA building. And we sort of went back and reviewed all the questions, and there's just no way to do that. So among the things we then discussed was the fact that the records program, the records management in the old library, remember this has all come about we wanted to move out of the old library. The records department can move relatively quickly if they move up to the challenge site. They can move most of their records up. As they digitize, they need less and less space. And AREL said that if records moves out of the old library, they can actually shut down that entire space. They have far less concern about leaking roof, far less concern about maintenance of the air conditioning. And basically, AREL is saying he thinks the old library, in other words, the Justice Center remaining in the old library could stay there for a relatively long time, three years without being at risk of taking, of requiring massive new input on that facility. So the committee voted to ask the county administrator to investigate a contract with Challenge Industries to move records up into, it's called South Hill Business Park is where that operation is located. So that will come back to the committee to see if that's something that we can really do and sort of firm up the idea that the emergency about moving out of the old library might be accommodated by moving records out and maintaining just the space for the Justice Center on the first floor at a far less cost to heat and cool that part of the building and far less concern about the about impending repairs to the building. And Mike, what did I get wrong? You reacted to something I said.
I didn't comment.
You made a big motion, so I wanted to give you an opportunity. Okay. Carol.
I have a question for that. I'm not quite understanding. So we would be, I understood that the roof was leaking, so we would be leaving a section of the building with a leaking roof and water coming in while another section would stay dry?
Oh, it's
Does
not
that work
great.
With buildings?
The AREL says it's not structural. He's not worried about it collapsing. It is, there are places where it leaks and they patch them, and he feels that they can manage that, and especially because that the area closest to the roof is the records department, the records management, and that's where you're worried about you know, if that stuff gets wet. Joe, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, the second concern of occupancy there was a catastrophic failure of the HVAC system, the air conditioning system. If we could vacate that area that records is in right now, basically wall off the day reporting section of the basement, if there is a failure of the existing mechanical system, heating or air conditioning, especially air conditioning, you can handle that with freestanding units in that space, as we have in other buildings. So he's less concerned about the effects of a catastrophic failure of those heating and cooling systems if it's only that lower level space that we could deal with kind of on a localized basis down there. So he feels much better about that being the only occupant of the building.
We'd leave mold growing and all the effects of water in buildings in one section and not... I guess at some point maybe the committee is the right place to do it, but I guess this makes no sense to me at all.
Arel is concerned about, you know, the integrity of these things, but making our money go as far as it can go. Let me go to Peter, David, and Mike.
Do I understand right that this relieves the pressure on day reporting to get out of that building?
That's right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
That's good news.
I would suggest that we abandon that idea. We find a new place for those folks and sell that building and use some of that money to alleviate some of the budget crisis.
This does not preclude selling that site, but it says that we don't, in some kind of emergency basis, have to get out and probably spend money that isn't part of a permanent solution. So it doesn't mean that we're going to stay there forever. Absolutely not. Okay. Carol, just a second. Okay.
Yeah, I agree, but I still think that the best solution is to move out of the building and unload it.
Well, related to that, we also directed the staff to do another real estate search. So Joe went back to Pyramid Brokerage and they're now looking for alternative spaces. You know, maybe something new has come up since we last looked, and they're going through it again to try to come back quickly to the committee and see if there is anything else that we've overlooked.
Does that need to be a downtown facility? I mean,
for day reporting and the other Justice Center programs, yes.
Okay.
The clients basically have no transportation. That's one of the reasons they're there. Mike?
Just that I think this deserves a lot more discussion than we can do with 20 minutes of 10 tonight.
I agree. I didn't want to just let it go by without saying anything. Carol?
Yeah, so I'll just say that if we have time at the July 1st Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, I'll ask that Arel give us a report on that facility. I mean, I know capital plan...
Right.
Is planning for the future, but this is a facility we own, and I guess I'd like us to know a little bit more about it. So
that's a good
watch
idea.
For it on the agenda.
That's a good idea. And I'll just say one other piece is that on the study about the use of this room and for the court system, Arel has gotten a design and he's sending it up to Office of Court Administration, and they're in the process of looking that over, and a decision is waiting for them basically to say, yes, this is what we want to have happen. So we're waiting on that one. And that's all. We are meeting the second Thursday of July, and I don't know what the date is. So, all right. Government operations. Mike, you have, Mike Lane, Chair, you have other business.
Yes. Too. Just a few things to report that I think are kind of important. One is that the Redistricting Commission, the Chair Hank DeLay, has scheduled its first organizational meeting for Monday, the 27th of June at 5:00 p.m. at the old jail. David Squires and Greg Potter reported to us that we have now inaugurated the new payroll system for the county. which it was no small task to get online. It's an important thing, and it'll do some things for us in the future. Marcia Lynch told us that she'd like to begin scheduling dates for budget meeting presentations if legislators want to have them in their districts, if they can combine them with other people that in the same towns, for example, other legislators. So you really need to talk to her about doing that if that's something you want to do, probably taking place in July or August. The road preservation law continues to be on the radar screen, and there's likely to be an RFP issued and come back to, well, it's going to come back for discussion about an RFP to go to some engineering firms to help us with some of the details for how we would determine the bonding and other requirements of the road preservation law. And I know Joe Mariana and his working group have been delving into that pretty well. We expect them to come back to F&I and to the Government Operations Committee next month with some recommendations there. Other than that, I have some resolutions I'd like to move.
Hold on,
Frank.
Mike, two questions, both principally around the budget presentation you just mentioned, scheduling with Marcia. We haven't, Joe asked earlier tonight about setting up or confirming a date for the retreat, which I think you said might be the second, the week of the 11th in July. What is it that we'll have if we're scheduling budget presentations in our districts?
Similar to what was done last year, different legislators had
I understand,
public meetings.
But to discuss, will we have information for the public to react to by then?
We'll have the things that we're understanding, the factors that are driving our budget decisions, which we can talk to the public about and receive comment. We won't have a budget to present to them.
No, I understand that, but we have to go be able to go talk to them about something.
Frank, you're going to develop a two-hour seminar that we're all going to use.
Yeah, I don't want to step on the budget committee's toes here. I'm just reporting that for public information purposes, that if you want to have these kind of presentations, they need to be scheduled.
This is Joe has all flavors of PowerPoints that we can use, and staff is prepared to be part of these meetings, but we really need to coordinate them so that we're not having 15 meetings is overkill. So we need to make sure that we have. I mean, if somebody wants to have their own meeting without staff, that's fine. But the issue is that resources are there to support such a meeting, but needs to be coordinated.
And you're looking to me to write the template?
Yeah, you're going to do it, Frank.
You got it.
Can we move on?
Okay, Mike.
Can I move Resolution L, authorizing the use of contingency funds to support the cost of administrative and technical support for the Independent Redistricting Commission's development of a decennial reapportionment plan? And I do move that.
And that's so moved, and Pat seconds. Thank you. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Frank.
Mike, it says in the first resolve that even though this money may be returned if unused, that we're setting aside 20 grand to support the cost of overtime and supplies and materials. Overtime?
What's going to happen, Frank, is mostly in the IT department, we're going to be purchasing some additional staff help there. At the overtime rate, rather than to go to a consultant outside, which would probably cost us between $75 and $150 an hour, overtime rate somewhere around $37 and a half an hour. So we think, in working with Greg Potter and his department, we think we can get a better product out of his help and experience and the folks that work with him than we can by going outside.
Is there, it says computer software too, is there a program that we can access?
Greg said that he thought they would be able to write their own software. It's in the resolution here only should they need to go out and buy some additions to the software that they have.
Okay, ready to vote?
And now, can I also say that this is, Dooley's made this point, it's not only for this year, but it would carry over for until the end of the commission's work.
Dooley?
I spoke with Kathy about possible addition there, and I think it was in line 33 where you could add at the end of that sentence, and materials needed to support the commission.
2011 and 2012?
Whatever you said, yes.
Yeah.
Wait,
So that, is that a request to add that to the motion?
Yes.
Okay, that's friendly, Mike?
It's friendly.
And Pat?
Point of order about that?
Just a second. Is that friendly, Pat? Okay.
Point of order about that. I don't think it's appropriate to add contingency funds for the 2012 budget. Why don't we just deal with that in the 2012 budget?
Joe?
We're using 2011 contingency money that if we need to, we can roll that over into 2012. So you're not anticipating a draw in 2012 money. It's using money that exists today for that.
Okay. Ready to vote? It's a short form roll call.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Anyone who wish to be recorded as no? Kathy? And the rest are yes? So that's 14-1. All right. Mike, we already did M.
Yeah, but I have resolution F. Was I supposed to add that?
No, that was done under consent.
Was that done under consent?
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. We have two member filed resolutions. Resolution N.
I've already introduced that as an amendment, as a substitute, and it failed, so I'm not going to
withdraw it. I think it's appropriate. Unless you withdraw
it. Try it again. Resolution N, authorization to continue the Tompkins County Health Service.
Okay, that's withdrawn, right? Nathan, and resolution O?
I am withdrawing that.
Okay, thank you. All right, we have the minutes of June 7th. Moved by Frank, seconded by Pam. Dooley?
On the bottom of the first page, under county administrator's appointment, the last sentence says Ms. McBean Claiborne noted her vote is not based on the individual. She would like to see, it should be changed to, she had expected to see more involvement in the process by legislators. I just checked with Leslie about that.
She had expected to see more involvement in the process. Is that okay with Frank and Pam?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? All in favor of the minutes as amended, please raise your hand. Any opposed? One opposed. All right. Motion to adjourn.
No executive session.
What, Nathan?
I'm sorry.
I didn't hear that, Nathan. What?
Never mind.
Executive session? No. Motion to adjourn. Thank you all. Good work tonight.